From the bottom of Lake Mendota to your radio, this is the Perpetual Notion Machine for Thursday, June 8th, 2017. I'm your host, Will Cushman. If you spent any amount of time near the shores of Lake Mendota in the last week or so, you've likely gotten a whiff of some nasty-smelling algae. Madisonians are no strangers to this seasonal scourge, driven by an overabundance of phosphorus making its way into the Ahara watershed and feeding massive algae blooms. But you might not be aware that the source of some of this algae washing up on beaches from Tenney Park to Marshall Park is shifting. Phosphorus is still the root problem, but now algae may have a new friend in the lake, the invasive zebra mussel. Zebra mussels have long been a problem in the Great Lakes and other inland waters in Wisconsin and elsewhere, but their arrival in Lake Mendota is something new, very new, and they are rapidly altering its ecosystem. This morning, the Clean Lakes Alliance hosted a talk by UW-Madison Professor of Limnology Jake Van Der Zanden at the Edgewater Hotel in downtown Madison. Van Der Zanden said that he was surprised himself by how quickly zebra mussels are colonizing the Mendota lake bed, with long-lasting consequences. I went to the talk this morning, attended by 100 or so people, and with permission from Van Der Zanden and the Clean Lakes Alliance, I'm sharing with you tonight some of the highlights from the talk. Because it was a public event held over breakfast, you will hear a little clinking of silverware and glasses and the occasional murmur from the audience. I hope you will forgive these minor distractions, as the substance of Van Der Zanden's talk is fascinating and important to know if you are concerned about our lakes and watershed. We begin with Van Der Zanden detailing the origins of zebra mussels in Lake Mendota.
The story. In 2015, the students in the limnology class, once again, were pulling some, they're collecting some insects for part of the class, and one student came up with a piece of rebar, a piece of metal that they found in the lake, and there was literally one or two zebra mussels on this bar. And this told us they're here. So this was the type of thing that you would see in 2015 if you were pulling up your dock. Maybe some of you had this experience. You pull up your dock and you see something like this. There's one zebra mussel, one here, one there. Okay, not too alarming, but if you know zebra mussels, you know that this is just the start of it. And so here we are a year and a half later, and this is a typical rock from several meters deep in Lake Mendota. This rock is absolutely covered in zebra mussels. And every single one of those zebra mussels is 1 year old. It's from last year's cohort. So there is the occasional larger one that's from, you know, 2 years ago or 3 years ago. But we're seeing this these types of densities on the bottom. And here's another photo. You see some zebra mussels here, but you see these green stringy mats. And so we're now seeing the bottom covered with this green slimy bits, tufts. I mean, the terminology is, there's a lot of words you can use to describe this sort of thing. Scientists have a lot of very technical terms like metaphyton and periphyton and so on, but I'm going to talk about it in terms of tufts and attached algae and slimy stuff on the bottom. So here's an example of the types of things that we're seeing on the bottom right now in Lake Mendota. So these are photographs just from the last week or two weeks. So a little background on zebra mussel. This is a species that has been around for a long time, and people often know a fair bit about this species. I would not be exaggerating to say that this is the most successful aquatic invasive species ever in the history of the world. It's from the Caspian Sea, but it's spread throughout Europe and has become incredibly abundant there. When it got into North America in the late 80s, early 90s, it rapidly spread throughout much of North America. Densities, they reach maximum densities of around 700,000 individuals per meter squared. So a meter squared is an area about this big. Imagine 700,000 of those things within that small little area. They're of major economic concern because they foul industrial intakes and infrastructure, and so you know, they cause billions of dollars of impacts just from the sort of industrial point of view. So if you have a water intake, your MG&E, or you're a water utility, you're constantly having to deal with the fouling of these zebra mussel shells growing on your pipes and intakes, clogging them, and so on. There has been some data collected on zebra mussels in Wisconsin. This is just some data from Upper Namabin and Lake Delavan that show the densities that we've seen here. They haven't typically been at 700,000 per square meter. That's the upper limit. Here's from Upper Namabin. They seem to max out at about below 15,000 per square meter, which is still a lot. And you can see that you don't see them in these really shallow waters. You don't see them very much in the really deep waters. It's around 3 to 5 meter depths where they're at their maximum. You look down on Lake Delavan, and again, very few in the shallow, shallow waters, but around 3 to 5 meter depths, you see them at their maximum. So you might go out to the lake and look in the water in the shallows, and you're not seeing zebra mussels, but they're there in really high abundances down at 3 and 5 meters. And then here again in Delavan, they taper off at these greater depths. In Delavan, you're seeing densities up around 45,000, maximum densities around 45,000 per square meter. So these are just some examples of the types of densities we see in lakes around here. Okay, so they're getting in. I mean, they're here in the Madison Lakes. There are sort of two drivers of why zebra mussels have impacts on our system, and that is that they eat and they excrete. Okay, so zebra mussels are a filter feeder. They're quite voracious. They live on the bottom on any sort of hard substrate. So imagine here's a kind of a cross-section of the lake, and your dock might be coming out here, and here's land, here's the bottom of the lake. And zebra mussels are going to be in these habitats, and they are on the bottom, and they're filter feeding, which means that they're feeding in the water column. Okay. And so they bring in water, they filter out what they want, and they they take what they want and they let the water go. Well, one way to think about this would be that they are capable of filtering the entire water column of the lake over the time frame of a couple weeks. Right?
Whoa.
So, yeah. Once they're in there, right? So they will literally filter the entire volume of the lake. So the lake has passed through a zebra mussel, essentially. That's one way to think about it. When you're swimming out there, it's been inside the zebra mussel. All right. So they're filtering the water, okay? So think of it as like a little sieve. And they're consuming the free-floating algae that's in the water. So we talked about that phytoplankton in the water that's floating around. That's what they feed on. Okay? In doing so, they clear the water. They remove that phytoplankton and that free-floating algae. And you may say, that's great. And in some ways, it is good to have clearer water. That's what we're working for. But what they're also doing is they're excreting phosphorus. Okay? Dissolves phosphorus that can be readily taken up by algae on the bottom. And they also excrete, feces and pseudofeces. Pseudofeces is this kind of a slimy material that kind of sits down on the bottom. So they're excreting materials. They're making the water more clear by removing the free-floating algae. And the result is that this bottom habitat becomes a really good habitat for a different type of algae. And so we see a proliferation of bottom algae, what you might think of as bottom mats. Aquatic plants will come up more strongly, so you're familiar with the Eurasian water milfoil. It's going to have more light, and it's going to be more prolific. Those aquatic plants are going to be overgrown with a filamentous algae, and you may have seen these tufts, like an aquatic plant coming up, and all this green growth coming off of that aquatic plant. And then this material becomes dislodged and you'll see these floating tufts. And if you've spent any time on the lake in the last week or so, you've probably noticed that there are a lot of these floating tufts of algae moving through the water. Has anybody seen these? Okay, yeah, you've all seen the floating tufts. These are what you would expect in a zebra mussel invaded system. Because the water is more clear, the nutrients are still there in the system, someone is going to take them up. And now you have a lot of light hitting the bottom. You have nutrients being excreted on the bottom, and the algae on the bottom are gonna proliferate, and that's really what we're seeing. And I have some video that I can show to highlight this. Saturday this weekend, I was just biking around checking out some sites along the shore. This is from over near Tenney Park. We have some of these tufts that have washed up into these shallow areas. It looks kind of like a blue-green algae bloom. But I think this is primarily tufts that have just been blown in. And they're sort of yellowish. And the yellowishness comes from bleaching from the sun. So they sit there right up at the surface, and once they're sitting there baking for a day or so, they start to turn yellow. So here we have some tufts. Here we're looking into the water, and you're seeing this stringy filamentous tufts in these shallow water environments. So it's pretty unpleasing, but you note that the water itself is clear. And so if you were to do a second disc reading, you may be able to see the disc go down pretty far, but you have all these tufty mats in the water. And then the thing that we're expecting and the thing that we're starting to see already is these wash-ups. And so here we have this, it's sort of blackish and it's decaying material on the beach. And what this material is are those tufts. They float up to the top, they get washed into the shallow waters, and then they get pushed up onto the beach. And this is going to be determined by, you know, the wind direction and whether these tufts are being dislodged. And so again, this is over by Tenney Park, and we're seeing lots of this these tufts washing in, decomposing on the beach, and this smells really bad. And maybe some of you have experienced this as well. You've been on the lakes, you know, in a few places around the lakes right now where the smell is really bad, and you're seeing this decomposing material washing up.
We are listening to zebra mussels, or talk about zebra mussels. So we just learned about how zebra mussels are contributing to the nasty algae washing up all over Lake Mendota shores. And now UW-Madison professor of limnology Jake van der Zanden will tell us how zebra mussels alter the lake's entire ecosystem.
Here's a way to think about how the ecosystem itself changes. In a lake, we have things on the bottom. We'll naturally have algae growing on the bottom, and then we have the phytoplankton, which is up in the water column. And the productivity in the bottom goes up into invertebrates and into fish and then into larger fish. And then in the water column, it goes up into plankton like Daphnia and then smaller fish and larger fish. And with zebra mussel invasion, we see the bottom productivity increase. We see the invertebrates on the bottom increase, and we see in this open water environment those decrease. So this is essentially kind of a cartoon that shows just the shifting productivity of the lake. So the focus of the attention in the lake really goes towards the bottom rather than up in the water column. And then what studies have also found is that fish tend to switch their feeding over towards feeding on these bottom pathways as well. So another way to think about it would be, in a lake without zebra mussels, we have green water, and this makes it so that a lot of light doesn't hit the bottom, right? It blocks the light because the water has got all this algae in it, and you don't have a lot of light hitting the bottom. And so most of the productivity of the system is in the open water, okay? And then you put zebra mussels in there, they clear the water, and light goes down to the bottom and the nutrients are there, so the productivity of the system is really all on the bottom. So I would argue that with this zebra mussel invasion, we're shifting the lake from a system that looks like this to a system that looks like this. Now, this green stuff here doesn't look too bad, but you know, this is just a cartoon version. You know, this can be excessive and it can be a pretty significant overgrowth. So I'm not sure this is an accurate representation. This looks like a little green beard here. So we're shifting it more towards bottom dominance, benthic dominance. Okay. Other impacts, zebra mussels are known to come in and smother native mussels. They will live anywhere they can find something hard to attach to. A tiny little twig, zebra mussels will be on that twig, they'll colonize it, and one of the things they really like to colonize are native mussels. So in places where zebra mussels have invaded, we've almost always seen the native mussel populations decline dramatically or become completely extirpated. They can facilitate the invasion of other invasive species like round goby, because round goby love feeding on zebra mussels. They both evolve together in the Caspian Sea. So the zebra mussels are here now, and if round gobies find their way into the system, they'll do really well because their favorite food is here. So you often see round gobies following up. Zebra mussel invasions do promote blue-green algae. It's complicated and it depends on a number of conditions, but zebra mussels do change the ratio of the different nutrients in a way that tend to promote blue-green algae, and blue-green algae are not readily consumed by zebra mussels. So zebra mussels eat the other algae, and then blue-green algae are able to better compete for the nutrients that are there. So overall, it tends to favor the well-being of the blue-green algae over the other algae. And as I noted, it promotes mats and tufts and so on, like what we see here. And again, this relates to there being more light and these nutrients down at the bottom.
One more clip from this morning's talk at the Edgewater Hotel from UW-Madison, professor of limnology. This talk was put on by the Clean Lake Alliance. And he was explaining all about zebra mussels, their recent infestation of Lake Mendota. And he is about to tell us what we can expect here in Madison from Lake Mendota being infested by zebra mussels in the near future.
So we should expect clear water. And you know, it might be that if we're taking Secchi depth measurements, we're going to see them get clearer. And I think you know these always vary a lot. They're going to continue to vary a lot, but I really do think we're going to see clearer water. But the flip side is that there are these tufts, right? We're going to see increased risk of blue-green algae blooms, but the thing that I'm really more concerned about are these bottom mats, these mats then floating up to the surface, weed overgrowth, and various types of shoreline fouling like I showed pictures of, and sort of the whole focus of emphasis in the lake, a lot of the productivity is really going to be moving more towards the bottom rather than up in the water column. So a lake-wide shift from the open water to the bottom. So I think, if I could characterize this, I would say that the lake will continue to have some aspects of poor water quality, but in a very different way than what we're used to. The water itself won't be sort of this pea green color that we sometimes see. We're going to see more productivity on the bottom that gets washed up inshore. And then, of course, we're going to have some time to talk about this, but what do we do about it? And you know, I feel like I'm just wrapping my mind around this issue as it's really been unfolding in the last couple of weeks. But I think the first message that I want to emphasize is that focusing on phosphorus reduction is more important than ever, because fundamentally the problem with these lakes is too much phosphorus, and that holds whether the system has zebra mussels or not. And the reason why zebra mussels are having these impacts is because there's so much excess phosphorus in the system. So if we can reduce the phosphorus in the system, we can turn down the magnitude of the impact of the zebra mussels. So this lesson that we've been focusing on of reducing phosphorus still holds true 100%. It doesn't change anything. We have to recognize that it's likely that the lake and our lakes are going to be fundamentally changed as a result of this. Zebra mussels are an ecosystem engineer and have, in many cases, typically transformed the system from something to something else. So it's kind of like a different system. Spiny water flea and zebra mussels may have interactive effects. We don't really know how these two species are going to combine to influence the system. And I think that's something that I'm quite curious about. In a lot of cases, I think we're going to have to focus on managing human expectations. There isn't a simple silver bullet that we can use to deal with the zebra mussel problem, and we're going to have to accept that a lot of these changes are going to play out while we try to figure out what to do. And like in any change, there are going to be winners and losers. So some fish species that can feed on zebra mussel are going to do really well, and there are going to be other fish species that, let's say, used to feed on zooplankton that aren't going to do as well. And this is something that, again, like, you know, not every species in the lake is going to do poorly. Some of them are going to do well. And so think of it as changing stage, and some species are going to benefit and some are going to really lose out. And here's a picture from Lake Wingra in 2012. And this is something that I kind of see as, again, not emblematic of what we'd see in Lake Mendota, because Lake Wingra is really shallow. But you look out on Lake Wingra this year, and there were these kind of mats up at the surface, but the water itself was really clear. And so the question you need to ask is, was there a good water quality here or not? It's not navigable. You can't even get your canoe through there. At the same time, if you use a Secchi disk measurement and you look at that data, you'd say, wow, the lake is really cleared up. So it makes us think a little bit in a more complex way about what is water quality? What do we consider to be high quality environment? And we realize that it's a very multi-dimensional thing. The Secchi disk measurement doesn't capture a lot of things like this. And I think we're going to have more of these types of challenges with these mats and scums in the Madison Lakes in the coming years. At the same time, I feel confident that we're going to continue to have the benefit of being on these lakes, and I think these lakes, even though they provided us with challenges, still really improve our quality of life. I think this is just another chapter in the changing nature of our environment.